Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Friday, December 17th, 2021. I'm Maggie Lake, and here with me today is Jim Bianco, president of Bianco Research. Hey, Jim, happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday to you, 1 week before Christmas.
Yeah, but it's kind of a weird Friday, right? Like we've got so many, we were just talking about the fact it's not slowing down at all. We just have so many things going on and you know, not turmoil in the market, but definitely feels a little more volatile and unsettled. You know, we had a sell-off again in equities and they're selling off into the close, which is never a great sign. Although today it's almost flipped from yesterday. The NASDAQ, which had been getting smoked, holding steady, trying to keep its head above positive territory. The Russell was rebounding and it was the Dow and the S&P taking it on the chin. The Dow, I think, closing near its lows. 500 some points, more than 1%. The S&P also about 1% or 3/4. 10-year yield dipping, holding around 139, 140. And we've got cryptocurrencies down of Ethereum 4%, Bitcoin something like 3.5%. And headlines of things getting canceled. Not Christmas yet, but the NFL canceling 3 games. I know that just crossed not long ago. And, you know, everyone upset about that, not to mention the party's getting canceled and virtual. So there's just a lot to take in here. We'll try to get through as much as we can, but let's start with this year-end action we're seeing with equities. What do you make of this selling, especially technology really getting slammed?
Yeah, let's start bigger picture here with what you see in the stock market. You could divide the world into 2 groups, 8 stocks, which are the FANG stocks, Tesla, Microsoft, NVIDIA, and everything else. The and everything else has not been performing very well over the last, you know, couple of weeks, over the last few months or so. It's been those big FANG. And by the way, the FANG stocks, Tesla, NVIDIA, Microsoft, $11 trillion in market cap. That would be the second largest stock market in and of itself if those 8 were listed separately. That's how big they are. So this has been one of the narrowest rallies we've ever seen. You mentioned that the Russell has been rebounding. Russell's at the same level it was at in June. It's been just an awful performer before
today.
Yeah,
when I say rebounding, I just mean not falling with everything else, right? That is just not participating. Yeah.
Right. And then in tech land, you know, people get a little head faked. Oh, look at how terrible tech is. And they go, well, I looked at the FANG stocks. They seem to be okay. Look at the non-profitable tech or the ARK stocks.
This is the blue line, I think, if we're looking at this chart that we have.
Right.
I don't know if it's up or not. Right. But that's horrible looking.
It down 30% since June is what that is, where the FANG stocks are essentially unchanged, but underperforming the overall stock market as well, too. This has been a brutal period for the speculative technology stocks as well. But like I said, if you're not a FANG stock, if you're not in that group of that Magic 8 group or so, Elite 8, if you want to call it that, it's really been a difficult market to go forward from here. And especially if you start meandering away from the United States, especially as you get closer to China, the China market has been just awful. Over the last several months as well, too. So when people go, let's look at the message of the market. Okay, there's 8 stocks, and then there's everything else. And everything else.
And by the way, Jim, when you say non-profitable tech, that sounds weird, right? Like, why would anybody be investing in it anyway? But that's not unusual because you're kind of looking for growth, right? You're reaching for companies that may be either reinvesting or early in their development. So they're not really profitable, but they're showing a lot of sort of hope, or that's what you're guessing. So it's not that, you know, this drop justifies that. It's just that people are turning away from having trust that they're ever going to materialize, or maybe trying to have a hard time sifting out what was a speculative guess in a pandemic world where we accelerated digitization maybe by 5 years. And then what's going to be sticky and maybe is the next big company.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the nuance there is it's referred to as non-profitable, not unprofitable.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that it's incapable of creating profits, But you're right that in the early stages of all these startup technology companies, they're not expected to make money. And so that's why they're put in this non-profitable category. And then you hope that they graduate into profitable companies along the way. So yes, this isn't that these are permanently broken companies that are incapable of making money. They're just early stage.
But what does that tell us when we look at that decline over 6 months? What is that signaling?
Well, I think it's two things. One, it is the natural correction to the gigantic run-up that these stocks had in 2020. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to say that every correction is a function of the previous advance. Well, when you went up 3 or 4x in 2020, you're not going to have a 5% correction. You're going to have a 25% correction when one does materialize. And that's what's happened as well, too. So some of it is that. Some of it also is that the marketplace might be losing its appetite for taking on speculative investments as well, too. And I know we'll talk about this later. If you're deep into the crypto rabbit hole, you're probably a little bit frustrated, too, because if you look at the price of Bitcoin or Ethereum, man, it's not very much different than where it was 6 months ago.
Yeah, you know what? Let's go ahead and do that right now, because I have so many questions about tech and about the macro picture. But since you mentioned that, we do have a lot of people, and we have a lot of people who saw what happened in those markets, got really excited, started dipping their toe in. And then you were on last week. First of all, you were on last week and you were pessimistic. And we certainly see what's happened since then. But when we were last on, I think it was last week, you also were really frustrated that cryptocurrencies, these digital currencies, which seem like an alternative asset for your portfolio, seem to be moving, you know, in lockstep with risk assets and in lockstep with, you know, the riskier part of the equity market. How are you viewing this? Because we are still seeing them. They're not falling out of bed. They're kind of stabilized where they are at this range. If you look at Bitcoin and Ethereum, and there are a lot more. We're just going to concentrate on those two because they're the biggest. But how are you feeling right now about that?
It's still frustrated. And to be clear, I mean, I'm a hodler. I own them and I'm not going to sell them anytime soon. But I get a lot of questions, especially on Twitter, from people saying, well, if the stock market does X or Y, what do you expect Bitcoin to do? And I was like, man, that is the wrong question. You know, because what you're implying is that that crypto is now just become a highly volatile version of the stock market. Yeah. I don't need it to be a highly volatile version of the stock market. I can go buy the stock market on leverage or sell a triple inverse ETF and skip Bitcoin altogether or skip Ethereum altogether. What I'd really like them to be is zero correlated to the stock market, to have their own cycle as well. But if they're going to start to assume the cycle of the larger macro market, then I think if that occurs over a long period of time, they lose their appeal because all they are is just an alternative. They're not the alternative to the current financial system. They become an extension of it. And that's kind of what we don't want them to be. Now, that's been happening now, and maybe it continues for another week or month or something like that, and that's okay. But this is the way it's supposed to trade, I don't think that that's a good thing. That's what I meant by my frustration with it, is I expected it to be zero correlated, not highly correlated with whatever the S&P 500 happens to do that day or that week.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jim. And I think a lot of people share that frustration. I was thinking a lot about it because I think we actually talked right before I headed to Las Vegas for the Real Vision Takeover event. And it was interesting. I asked people there about that and there was a lot of discussion. And we also constantly get asked about how to better understand this space. And it was great when we were there and talking about all of this. Raul Powell, the co-founder of Real Vision, as you all know, and Kevin Kelly made a really big announcement related to that. Real Vision is going to be teaming up with Delphi Digital to create a new crypto research service, which literally just launched last night. Raul was talking about it yesterday on the Ask Me Anything he did with Real Vision members. Let's have a listen to how he described it.
Reach out to Kevin, because I kept picking his brains. I even got him to write articles for me for Global Macro Investor because I was outside of my knowledge base. I'm like, Kevin, why don't we do something for the Real Vision community? Why don't we create that kind of ultra high quality crypto product? And Kevin is a Real Vision fanatic anyway. And he's like, well, I'm a subscriber to Real Vision Pro. and Macro Insiders. He said, what I think we need is a crypto insiders product, a crypto pro. And I'm like, you're dead right. What we're trying to do is help people who really want to get to know this space. So we've teamed up and we're launching it, which is this whole pro crypto tier of membership. And it'll dovetail in, you know, if you're a pro member, you'll get a discount. But for everybody, there's going to be a huge discounted launch. You can probably pay in crypto. We're just finalizing that now. So that's great. So it won't cost you, you know, much in terms of ETH. And what also is really interesting is we're going to launch it with an NFT. And what the NFT is everybody's heard me talking about our Web3 vision and tokenizing real vision and building asset management or brokerage and all of these community-driven things, research. Well, we talked about the AFN before, the apes with guns. They're part of our community, but they're not from us. But that's great because that's how communities now work. We're not in control. But now we're going to launch an NFT that's going to come with this. The community is going to design the NFT, and we're going to lean on them to help us develop our Web3 future. And, you know, that's when we tokenize Real Vision, all of that. If you go to realvision.com/procrypto, get on the wait list as fast as you can, because then you get involved in these founder NFTs, the whole community that's going to help us build Web3, and you're going to get the best crypto research in the world.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Welcome back to Real Vision's Daily Briefing. Let's jump back in and hear the day's top analysis.
Awesome stuff. So for those of you who are not familiar with Kevin Kelly and the team at Delphi, they're really one of the premier cryptocurrency research firms. He's the one that Raoul turns to actually to help him understand the space. So that should give you an idea of the level of knowledge. He's actually also as tall as Raoul. We were laughing hysterically looking at them. In fact, I think there's a picture of him, another one of my colleagues, Elaine and Raoul. Like all these people are really tall, which is crazy. But anyway, we're super excited about the collaboration. We think it's going to help a lot of people. So for more information, you can go to realvision.com/procrypto. realvision.com/procrypto. You can find out information. There's an early adopter offer and a Real Vision NFT, if I'm not mistaken. Super cool stuff and some offers, but I think they're limited and maybe it closes on the 23rd. So you're going to want to check it out. And you can also, I'm sure, find information on our Twitter feed as well or post on the exchange if you need help. So Jim, you know, are you expecting this back to what we were talking about? Are you expecting the correlation that you're seeing that frustrates you to decouple as we go into 2022? Do you think it was just a product of this kind of weird time we're in right now, coming out of the pandemic and kind of shifting out of that quantitative easing, extraordinary measures that were put in place? Or is this something that's going to be a little stickier that we're going to grapple with as the industry matures from this very early stage?
Now, I expect it to decouple. It'll last for a couple of more weeks, a month or two. But I think the reason that everybody's focused on it is there's one giant narrative that undertows everything in the market right now. The Fed is pivoting towards a more hawkish stance. The Fed is looking like they're getting ready to raise interest rates, reduce, you know, do the taper, raise interest rates, potentially reduce their balance sheet, as Governor Waller hinted at earlier today as well, too. And so all of that matters for the economy, inflation, financial markets. The 22 election is even wrapped up in that as well, too. So it seems like everything is kind of focused on this one story. This will get resolved one way or the other. The Fed will hawkishly pivot, and then we'll have to price that in, or they won't, and we'll price that in, and then we might see the correlation start to drift away. But for right now, it's really all about that one story, is that what's the Fed going to do? They're going to raise rates. How aggressive are they going to raise rates?
Yeah, we got a great question from Oliver on the exchange that covers a lot of this. And they're asking, what's your outlook for economic growth in a world of less stimulus and possibly higher rates? And do you think we will see more stimulus in 2022 after weakness shows? So that gets to this really interesting dynamic on how the Fed is going to handle this. It's a tricky job they have.
Yeah. So I, you know, this is a great question because it comes to the intersection of a lot of things. The Fed is looking to pivot, as I mentioned, towards being more hawkish, potentially raise rates. The belief by a lot of people, and this is what got us going Wednesday higher, is, yeah, the Fed will maybe raise rates, it'll be hawkishly pivoted, but don't worry. Anything that upsets the apple cart, anything the market doesn't like, the Fed will apologize and immediately stop. Because
and you get that hint coming through from Oliver. We've been conditioned to understand that that's what will happen.
Right. We have been conditioned to understand that's what happened because that's what has happened for the last 13 years. But there's a new dynamic in this inflation. And this whole argument about whether or not it's transitory or persistent, I've been pretty adamant that it's persistent and it's going to stay persistent. But let me talk about what if inflation comes and the Fed says, well, we can't really raise rates that aggressively because the stock market might not like it. What's the downside? Where's the consequence? The consequence is in politics. If you look at the polling data, and I'm going to say this nonpartisanly, for the majority party, which happens to be the Democrats, they're getting killed in the polling data right now. And they're getting killed because the public is saying, without question, the number one issue in the country is not Omicron, it's not COVID, it's inflation. They are very, very upset about inflation. Now, go back and read about where they were in the 70s about inflation. That's where they are right now. So here's the thing.
And inflation, we used to say in the news, it's a pocketbook issue, right? You can talk about economic issues and you can talk about the changing workforce and all that. When you go to the gas pump and you're to fill up your tank, it costs double what it did, or you're tacking on another hat. You feel that immediately. That is money out of your wallet that you can't spend on other things. Same thing with your grocery bill, housing, you name it. Those are real cost items for consumers that they feel. So it's understandable that it's feeding through to the political discourse.
Yeah, and keep in mind too, 40% of the country does not have a stock portfolio or own the house they live in. They have no savings or very little savings, and they rent. So when those prices go up at the gas pump or the grocery store, they just get less, full stop.
There's no cushion.
There's no cushion. You, me, a lot of people watching this, all right, we might be in the same position from our paycheck wise. Oh, but my stocks went up. My house has increased in value. So we're a little bit less agitated about that. So what I was going to say was, for those that say, well, the Fed can never get aggressive in raising rates because the stock market might not like it, then the Democrat Party gets slaughtered. And there are already rumors in Washington that the sacrifice will be Janet Yellen in 2022. We'll blame her for inflation, throw her out the door. And by the way, if you want a quick crypto aside to that, Gensler is already positioning himself to be the heir apparent. But let's be real here. This is, a white guy that wants to become Treasury Secretary in this administration. So he has to appease Elizabeth Warren. In order to get her blessing, if he wants to be Treasury Secretary, he's going to come down even harder on crypto.
Yeah, and that, for Inside Baseball, Elizabeth Warren is seen as, for those who don't follow it very closely, very anti-Wall Street and certainly anti-, very worried about consumer protection. And Has been tough on the crypto space. So Jim's suggestion is that the trade-off is he will come down very hard so that he can get access into the job he wants. That's very House of Cards prediction.
Yeah, it is House of Cards, but I wanted to just emphasize this idea. There is a downside. Oh, we can't upset the stock market.
Listen, if you take the politics out of it, the inflation, fighting inflation, price stability is the Fed's mandate. We just have been in a deflationary period. And so, you know, there have been plenty of economists, plenty of people around who have been very vocal about the fact that they're concerned about the Fed's policy toward inflation, who have nothing to do with politics. So there's a real economic concern on that front as well. I think Oliver's getting to a very good question, which is what happens to the economy and growth and demand if they get too aggressive too soon?
Yeah, so...
or if the bond market front runs them on that, Jim, because that can happen too. Few people remember bond vigilantes, but sometimes the bond market does the work of the Fed well before the Fed ever gets around to it.
Exactly, and I think the bond market's doing that work right now. In the short end. Yeah, but also in the flattening of the yield curve.
Okay.
The market is one of the interesting things about this period right now. People ask me, where am I with the Fed? And I say 3.5 rate hikes next year, 3 rate hikes, possibly a fourth. Wow, you're on the outlier over there, you know, being very aggressive. No, that's actually what the market's priced in.
Yeah.
And what's an unusual period about now is the market pricing is an outlier versus consensus opinion. That's almost not, it's rarely the case, but it is now. No one believes the Fed's going to go 3 or 4 times next year. And the market does. And I think the market understands they have no choice but to do something about inflation. And if the stock market has to be sacrificed, then the stock market has to be sacrificed. Remember, consumer confidence is an 11-year low. It's an 11-year low, and the stock market made new highs 2 days ago. The public already thinks the economy's terrible. So if you tell them, you give them headlines in the first quarter, stock market down 10%, well, what took it so long? That's kind of basically what their view is going to be.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Real Vision's Daily Briefing. Let's jump back in and hear the day's top analysis.
But if you want to,
but would it only be 10%? This is where I wonder, because as much as there is, and this is, I think, a fact that people miss, you mentioned it before, there is not large scale stock ownership in the U.S. It feels like there is. However, there is now a link between the health of the stock market. We saw what happened when asset markets fall out of bed and the financial system gets caught up in counterparty risk. People may not understand exactly the block, you know, the domino effect, but they know that it was horrible in 2002. The financial crisis involved stocks falling out of bed too. And so there is a feeling, and it's all over the news. The Dow is down 500 points. The Dow, you know, and so then there's a sense that things aren't going well too. So that can become a political issue, a problem as well. So they're almost in a no-win situation. Do they let prices inflate? That's bad and gets people upset. Do they let the stock market fall? The financial system? There's a lot of leverage. We have more retail players in than ever. That's bad. It's not a great choice.
Right. And really, it comes down to the mistake that they made was the word transitory, and they stuck with that way too long. Maybe if they started tapering 6 or 9 months ago, maybe we already had one rate hike in, that they might have, you know, that we might be in a different situation, that they could benefit both at the same time. Mm. You know, now everybody's hoping that they could pull an inside straight and find that magic path that will help bring in inflation, help, but not hurt the stock market. Boy, that's a tough one. If anybody knows anything about poker, pulling an inside straight is like the hardest thing in the world to do. It's technically possible, but practically you don't even expect it to happen at
to
that
happen.
Point.
I think there's like a bowling move that's also really, really hard. And I can't remember it. Some young kid did it. I'm not a bowler, but some young kid did it. It's hitting some kind of crazy combination and it rarely happens. But let's talk. It's so easy to get sort of really concerned and down on this. Let's talk about something positive for a moment that might help them, maybe. You do have the prospect. I mean, Washington's a mess, but you have the prospect for some sort of fiscal stimulus coming through still, maybe. And I just had a really interesting conversation today with Jason Hsu of Raliant, and that's going to air. It was all about China, and that's going to air on the platform, I think, next Wednesday. I suggest watching it. He said something that was really interesting to me, that China is a big part of the global economy. They've been very reluctant to stimulate and really step on the gas there because they've been dealing with the property sector bubble and they did not want money fueling, reinflating those bubbles they're trying so hard to pop. He feels like phase one is done. They've put regulation in place that will prevent that from happening. So they may be more predisposed to stimulate and strengthen their economy today. Might the Fed get some sort of tailwind from either of those areas to help cushion the demand side of the economy if they are in a process of sort of weaning us off the accommodative stance?
Well, not to be a Johnny Downer here, but yes, if they were.
Hell no.
Three things. First of all, part of the thing about inflation, Greg Yep in the Wall Street Journal had a great piece on this last week. Everybody who talks about inflation likes to think it's either a supply problem or a demand problem. You know, it's too much stimulus.
Question, by the way, asking about the supply chain issues.
Yes. The answer is it's both. It's a rare instance when it's both. We have record demand right now, and we've got a supply chain problem, which, by the way, is not getting better right now. The number of ships anchored off of Los Angeles, the highest it's ever been is today. It's not getting better. What they've been doing is they've been playing. I've been saying this on this platform and others. They've been playing with the numbers. Everybody says, oh, the number of ships offshore is the signal of the supply chain problem. Move them 150 miles over the horizon there. You can't see them, problem solved. No, it's actually worse, but you can't see the ships. So a lot of people have assumed that the problem is getting better, but it really hasn't. On the demand side, I'd like to use the, you know, what's happened on the demand side is our preferences, our purchasing preferences have changed. And that's probably because of COVID. The lockdowns gave us extra money. The stimulus gave us extra money. The way we spend changes. We're buying stuff, durable goods in record amounts. That's why there's 96 ships anchored off of Los Angeles to get that stuff from Asia in here. And so what we're going to see is that is going to continue, even if we see some kind of a slowdown in the economy. People are still going to pick up their phone and they're going to order boxes from Amazon. That's where the Fed could come in with raising rates to try and cool that demand. So I'm not worried about slowing demand, at least not yet. The problem is demand is too strong in certain areas. Now, a lot of people say, well, don't worry, we're going to shift back to services. Okay, two things about that. One, the reason that we're buying so much stuff is the biggest event of this generation was last year. We were all sent home for a year. A lot of things have changed. Our purchasing patterns have permanently changed. I don't know what they are. All I know is don't look to 2019 and think that that's what we're doing anymore when it comes to purchasing
patterns. And we like to look ahead. That's what we do here. And, you know, to that point, it is that, you know, some of the trends that may have come have been accelerated by 5 years. You know, talk to anybody in the digital space and how we operate, how we work, you know, what the future
right.
work looks like. Some of this will be state. We don't know yet, though, what it's going to look like. So in that unknown, are you long anything? What do you like here as you try to look out to 2022? How are you positioning?
Well, I am positioned, you know, for a couple of things. One, I do think that the yield curve will continue to flatten, and maybe by mid-year it might even be close to zero. I was going to say, unfortunately, the Fed is very, very skilled at doing something, and that is raising rates too much till they break something. And so what I'm talking about, that they're forced to raise rates, they might break something. It might be the economy, it might be the stock market. Why is the long end at 139 or 140? Why is it kind of meandering down as the short end keeps going up?
Because they know they're going to break something.
They're going to break something. That's what the signal from the market is. And that they might have no choice. Well, why would they break it? Because they have no choice. They cannot not deal with inflation. We haven't seen this for 40 years.
And also, they've been the only game in town. Any other part that's supposed to pick up, they're not supposed to be the be-all, end-all. They're supposed to be one mechanism. We've had absolutely nothing, no ability to do anything but break and destroy things coming from the other side, which is supposed to be fiscal, which translates to Washington. So any smart ability to sort of offset doesn't exist, as far as I can tell.
Right. And as far as the fiscal stimulus goes, what was the big Washington story of the last 24 hours? The Build Back Better bill has been
postponed
to 2022. Yep. Now, the reason it's been pushed to 2022 is Joe Manchin won't vote for all that spending. What did Joe Manchin cite as one of the reasons?
Inflation.
Or two of the reasons? Inflation and Powell's testimony. He's so afraid of overspending and creating inflation. He's killed it off right now. Right. Is that going to get better in January? Oh, but now all of a sudden we still have inflation, but now I want to spend money. So there's, you know, the idea that we're going to get fiscal stimulus, it's a lot harder than you think. And one of the reasons that's happened is another Washington thing. What do you never hear a story about? You never hear a story that President Biden has sat down with Mitch McConnell or Kevin McCarthy, the minority, you know, the House and the Senate Democrat Republicans, and said, "Hey guys, in Build Back Better, what Republican thing can we stick in there to get five Republican votes?"
I mean, like you can't even. We can't even. We'll all be. Thank God it's close to happy hour. We'll all be depressed if we talk about Washington. So what do you do, right, Jim? That's what do we do with our money?
So
what are you doing for as we shift into the new year with all these uncertainties?
The Fed's gonna raise rates as the market expects, which is more than people think. The yield curve is gonna flatten maybe to zero, which would signal a recession, but that would only be at the middle of next year, not right away. So I'd be playing for a flattening yield curve from here. I would be playing for more inflation because I think that the other thing we haven't talked about is Omicron and COVID. It is spiking in Europe. It is out of control in places like South Africa and the UK. And it's now starting to spike in South Korea and in Vietnam. In Asia, two things about Asia. They used the Sinovac vaccine, which the studies have said offer no protection against Omicron. There was a Hong Kong study that came out 2 days ago that said that. And second of all, they have zero COVID policies. So if like two
supply
people get
chain
sick,
problems will persist.
Yes, they're going to shut everything down. They do in China all the time. So if the supply chain slows down a little bit more, you're going to have to pay a little bit more for that Amazon box. So basically, we're looking at inflation. So I'd be playing all the inflation plays, commodities, cyclicals, inflation-sensitive stocks, real rate bonds, and the like. Especially because everybody still is on this transitory kick. It appears Bank of America put out a study, or a fund manager survey, on Wednesday, and so did CNBC, and both of them said the majority of respondents still think inflation's transitory. So we have not priced in persistent inflation yet. So if you think inflation is persistent, then if you play the plays of persistent inflation, commodities, cyclicals, inflation beneficiaries, real rate bonds, there's still more pricing to come in those bonds. There's still more juice to be gotten out of that. It is not completely priced in yet that inflation is a bigger issue than people think.
Yeah, it's going to be, I don't know that anybody's going to get any rest over this holiday period as we try to sort of figure out all of these cross currents because it's difficult. But as always, Jim, we appreciate your advice. We appreciate your insights. Gives us a lot of things to think about as we wrap our head around what our portfolio might look like and really all of the areas of the market that we're going to have to watch so closely. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year's to everybody as well, too.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jim. And of course, the conversation continues on the exchange. You can hit Jim on Twitter or post on the exchange. And if you have any thoughts about anything, there's a lot of information we crammed in this one today, but you're going to need it. So feel free to do that. And for any information about the new cryptocurrency research product that we're releasing, again, you can go to realvision.com/procrypto to find out what Raul and Kevin Kelly and the Delphi team are up to and how to sign up and the deadlines on that. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend. We didn't mean to leave it on a negative note, right? Information is power. So take it, enjoy the weekend, enjoy your family and holidays. We will be back next week for the daily briefing. So we're not going to leave you without information as we head to the new year. So enjoy, take care, and good luck out there.